You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.
Welcome back. You're on New Hampshire Now with 91450 and NHTalkRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan. Appreciate you joining us for the program. This hour of the show is brought to you by Reuben Community Mental Health. In this segment of the program, presented by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for individuals who have dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour and celebrate life with the Birches. Phone number 224-9111. New Hampshire primary interviews on the program presented by Rath Young and Pignatelli, a national impact that's uniquely New Hampshire. For information, check out rathlaw.com. For this interview, we head to Gibson's Bookstore on Main Street in Concord, where I sat down with Cory Booker. I'll be joined here at Gibson's Bookstore as part of the New Hampshire primary campaign trail by United States Senator Cory Booker, whose campaign to me is so intriguing. It's an aspirational campaign. It's a campaign that focuses, you know, on the best of us and trying to inspire individuals in a time period where that's not always the case. A lot of times the darker angels, the ones that are speaking to us. What do you sense in terms of how this campaign is resonating? As you thought about what this campaign was going to be about, you know, why did you land on this message for this particular point in time?
So it's who I am. My whole career has been trying to take places that were divided or where people were under attack, whether it's Newark, New Jersey, or even my time in the Senate trying to get bipartisan bills passed. I've learned in my life the way you get big things done is by bringing people together. This idea that you fight fire with fire, well, as a guy who was a mayor and ran a fire department, that's not kind of a good strategy for putting out fires. Mm-hmm. And so I know that our history is at its best when we pull together across the lines that divide us, coalitions of folks in the civil rights movement, in the suffrage movement, in the labor movement. We have seen advances because we've come together. And this politics of pitting people against each other, of demeaning politics, degrading politics, putting folks down, cutting up the political pie in order to advance ambition, that's wrong. It's not who we are as a country. So I have a lot of very good ideas, but I've learned from my career that the best way to achieve great things is to bring people together, not to divide them.
You know, one of the things that's most interesting is how you draw from history and try to find parallels to where we are at this point in time. And you know, if, in fact, you are the Democratic nominee, you're going to be going against President Trump, who has said and will say vicious, mean, horrible things about you and anybody around him. So how do you confront that? Do you take on, you know, you've talked about Gandhi, you've talked about Martin Luther King. Do you think that those examples still work in this type of environment, or do you feel the need that you're going to have to meet his fire with fire?
So nobody in this race has come up through a more difficult, sort of savage, almost, I should just say, more mean-spirited politics. I had to take on a political machine. There's actually an Oscar-nominated documentary about it called Street Fight that's on Netflix. And, you know, people who watch that can see I faced the most difficult opposition, was able to keep my character and keep this... these ideals and actually win, but win a bigger victory. You know, when we won the mayor's office, we brought together our opposition, people who had campaigned against me, people who had worked against me. And I reminded people that in the city of Newark, we have a common purpose. We have common pain all over the city. We've got to unite in that sense of common purpose. So my experiences in Newark, my experiences in the Senate passing criminal justice reform and more, all of these things show me that what we need now in America is not a leader that's simply trying to beat somebody else or beat Republicans. We need to be a nation that unites Americans for our common purpose, to address injustice, to address our unfinished business and our common pain.
When you look at the type of experience that you have, there's so many different types of candidates who are going to enter this race or have already. Your experience to me is very intriguing because you have the aspect of being a mayor, which is so important because as a mayor, Republican issues, Democratic issues don't matter. It's finding the best solutions to problems. And you also have the Senate side of things where you look at things from a broader, more philosophical type of perspective. And there's also a thirst, in my view, for something new and for an excitement, for there to be a change, for the country to get back onto a path of progression as opposed to digressing. What about your experience do you think has prepared you for this moment?
So I had to be mayor of an inner city that was... in many ways declining in terms of losing jobs, losing population. And then the heap upon that was the recession. When you have a nation in recession, inner cities have depression. And I had to lead through that crisis where people told me it was going to be impossible even to just balance our budgets, not to mention expand the parks, transform our schools, lower crime, and bring businesses back to Newark. But we did it because we were fearsome with that conviction that if you want to go fast in life, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's what we were able to do in Newark. In Washington, I heard all the cynicism. One of the big issues I went down there was for criminal justice reform. I had the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Republicans, going to the floor to speak out against what we were trying to do. But I went to his office, sat down with him, found common ground, identified our common values, and started to build from there. We don't need in America more tribalism, more divisions. It's important to stand your ground and your values for justice and ideals. But what I find now more and more is when I talk to people who identify as different than me, geography, party, you name it, when you actually take time to talk to them, you find that even on the most controversial issues like guns, you know, 90% of Americans agree we should have common sense background checks. Prescription drug costs. Overwhelmingly, Americans agree that we should use our power to negotiate down prescription drugs and hold pharma bad actors accountable for outrageous raisings in prices. When you talk about common values, you find that Americans share those common values. And the question is, are we going to have leaders that call us together or leaders like we see right now that pit us against each other or try to blame or worse, demonize aspects of sections of our country?
So when you begin as president, you like the premise of that. When you begin as president, do you start with the issues that are that we have commonality? Do you start with prescription drugs if something is not done on that by then? Do you start with common sense gun control where you see that 90% approval, or you're going to be driven by a progressive base who's going to want to see solutions in regards to a Medicare for all, climate change, things that you talk about and care about as well. So do you try early on to say, I am going to be different and I'm going to unite folks, or do you go to in the direction of the more progressive policy?
So what I learned as mayor, representing a very low-income city, is that you every single day have to fight to make people's lives tangibly better. I couldn't sit there and say, whoops, I got a Republican governor in Chris Christie. I can't get anything done. I've got a Republican governor, or I've got a Republican president, is when I started at the very end of George Bush's population. People have an urgency. And right now there's hurting in America where folks don't have time to wait. And so in my first 100 days, we need to put forward programs that are going to make people's lives better. Heck, I hope we can get to, and I'm going to try. I'm going to set forth a vision of getting to universal health care, everybody having access to health care. But if we can't do that, if we have only 50 votes in the Senate or worse, 49, we've got to push those things that work. And I think there's an appetite in the Senate and in the House, having been there now for 5+ years, that if we come out with a pragmatic plan for more affordability for working class, low income, middle class Americans, to say, hey, this is a plan to lower your prescription drug costs. This is a plan to expand healthcare. Hey, this is a plan to deal with your college loan. And by the way, here's a win-win for climate change. Just like when I was a mayor, we retrofitted environmentally our buildings, lowered our carbon footprint, lowered our energy costs for taxpayers, and put people to work. Those are the kind of things that even under the more difficult congressional environment, I think we can win battles that will make a real difference for folks who are struggling with the cost of living, folks who are struggling with the cost of healthcare, folks who are rightfully worried about job opportunities and climate change. There are so many win-wins that we can get even now if we had the right president that was bringing people together to accomplish them.
That's Cory Booker, Democratic candidate for president, senator from New Jersey, former mayor of Newark, New Jersey, joining us here at Gibson's in downtown Concord. Liam, who is 8 years old, is doing his project on Barack Obama, who was inaugurated when Liam wasn't even born yet, which makes me feel very old. But I was just doing the math in my head. Liam wasn't born when Barack Obama was inaugurated as president of the United States. So I'm curious from your perspective, when you look at President Obama's presidency and look at it in a position of where we are now and also where he began in terms of his expectations, that there's going to be a transformational change. Washington was going to change, and the lives of particularly individuals who were in poverty was going to get better. Obviously, not a lot of that has happened, and he perhaps was a victim of his own expectations. So how do you assess the Obama presidency and where he brought us?
Well, I just want to say that one of the things that we've got to focus on, if anything we learned from the Obama era, is that there are fundamental problems in our democracy itself that we have to address. Money in politics is destroying our country and allowing the interests of large corporate agglomerations to come over the will of the people. The way we're drawing our legislative lines, we're seeing voter suppression now in ways that are unconscionable. We need to get back to the fundamentals of our democracy, get money out of politics. That's why I firmly believe that you can't campaign wrong and then think you're going to govern right. That's why in this campaign, I'm not taking corporate PACs, I'm not taking federal lobbyist money, I'm not taking pharma exec money. We've got to get back to getting money out of our politics, and then we have a more democratic system. We got to deal with voting rights in this country and make sure that whether it's places like Standing Rock or what we just saw go on in the state of Georgia, where people were denied the right to vote, we've got to address those so we can start getting people that really represent the people and represent their will. President Obama was dealing with an undemocratically elected House. You see the gerrymandering in places like Ohio that denied a true democracy where you have many more Democratic votes but less representation. So these are things that we can do that will actually help for the long term us to make changes that are democratic, that people will support.
The populist themes that we saw during the 2016 election and that we're going to see and are seeing here in this election, you know, my view is a direct result of obviously the Great Recession. But individuals who here in New Hampshire and across the country voted for Barack Obama as independents and expected that, you know, their lives were going to get better, that their jobs were going to they're going to be able to increase their wages as a result of better jobs, and that individuals who were impoverished were going to rise. And, you know, we continue to see the same, obviously, you know, issues here 10 years later. So what is the prescription, in your view, to change that? Because that, in my view, the populist themes are going to drive this election.
I absolutely agree. If people 2 years after I'm elected president, God willing, can't say, look at the things that have changed in my life, or even believe as I'm running that I will change, that's the rub here, is that people are losing faith in their ability of our government to deal with our complicated problems. And so what I'm going to be doing is putting forth a very pragmatic set of changes that we can make that will drive down prescription drug costs, that will improve our infrastructure and people's access to clean water. There are pragmatic things that we can do that most Americans believe in that we have to do to create a more affordable, a more economically empowering country for ourselves. And this isn't complicated stuff. You know, you just take the corporate tax rate that this president dramatically lowered. I'm one of those guys that said, you know what? A lot of businesses, small, medium-sized businesses, were paying too high taxes. But to lower it to 21 when large corporations still have these loopholes, so they're paying effective tax rates of zero, that's outrageous. Pushing it back up to 25, putting our tax loopholes, or excuse me, tax values to help small businesses and not these large corporations who are often taking advantage of the tax process, gives us a lot more revenue to invest in things like public education, to invest in things like public infrastructure that help to create jobs immediately and pathways to success. This isn't radical. This isn't off the charts. This is stuff that we do to improve people's lives. I'm happy there are more and more people starting to stand up with bolder visions for our future. And that's where I live. I told people in Newark that we were going to radically transform this city. People were doubters, and now we did it. But we've got to start by giving people something to believe in, a clear pathway forward that we're going to make their lives better.
So two more things. On that, should we expect to see throughout the course of the campaign an extensive rollout in regards to policy? Is your campaign going to be one that's going to be, you know, policy driven, where we see, you know, when you come back to New Hampshire each time, not each time per se, but as you're going to see different policy initiatives, whether it's in regards to prescription drugs, whether it's in regards to middle-class taxes and so forth. Is that going to be how your campaign is driven?
Absolutely. At the end of the day, I'm a bit of a policy wonk who also believes in effectively implementing changes that make a difference in people's lives. So I'll be rolling out a lot of our policy statements, but I don't want people to forget one of the larger themes that has to undergird anything that we do. We are a country that will not be able to do big things if we can't figure out a way to get more people engaged, more people involved, and more people coming together. I think we need a revival of ideals of grace in this country, a more courageous empathy, and an understanding that we share a common destiny and get back to that sense of common purpose to deal with those things that still ail and undermine the vibrancy of our democracy. So the policy will be there. I will set my ideas aside any other candidate for presidency. But on a spiritual level, when I look at all the times we've made jumps in our country, whether it's for workers' rights or for suffrage or for civil rights or even going to the moon, all of these things were achieved, not just because we had the right ideas. America has the right ideas to fix most of the problems we're talking about. What we're not lacking is the question of, can we? Or is there a pathway? The question is, do we have the collective will? We need leaders that are going to re-foster that sense of common purpose and an understanding that we're all in this together, that we need to put the more of that indivisible back into this one nation under God.
Yeah, I think that policy can also be used in order to bring people together and to create an environment of being America again. You know, you mentioned landing on the moon or other initiatives that have brought people together. And I look at, as an example, disease and, you know, people dealing with Alzheimer's, cancer, mental illness, and other aspects of life that's become everyday life. And, you know, a focused effort on individuals collectively with the leadership of a president eradicating certain diseases, I think would allow for Americans to plant a flag in, because it seems like there is not that love of the American flag that we saw before. The American flag has kind of changed in terms of who, you know, feels certain ways about it and how it's been co-opted. So where do you see us going, and where would you take us in regards to bringing folks together for a common goal?
I love that you said that about the American flag, because I was one of these households with a family that had busts of presidents, American paraphernalia all around, which was always interesting to me because my parents often told some of the ugliest stories about this country, being denied opportunity, being denied housing because of the color of their skin. But yet they told these glorious stories about who we were as a country, that white families, Jewish families, people different than us, stood up and fought for my parents to get opportunity. That's what they loved about this country, the ideal that patriotism is love of country. And you can't love your country unless you love your fellow countrymen and women. And this idea that of love is not a weak or saccharine thing. It's saying that, hey, I see your dignity. I see your worth. I see that assaults on your dignity are insults on everyone's dignity, and that we have one American destiny. That's the kind of patriotism that we need to reinvigorate in this country, and an excitement about our nation's values. Heck, you know, our founding documents reflect bigotry. I mean, they call Native Americans savages. Women aren't mentioned at all. Blacks are fractions of human beings. But the story of America, from the Civil Rights Movement to the suffrage movement, is people from different backgrounds, blacks and whites, marching together, struggling together. Goodman, Cheney, Schwerner, black and Jewish, literally dying together in the Civil Rights Movement to advance the ideals of this country more towards that truth of liberty and justice for all. I will be one of those people that waves the flag and calls us back to that sense of patriotism. You can't hate our fellow American just because they vote different than us or look different than us. And anybody who preaches hate or bigotry or demeans or degrades, whether it's the press calling them the enemy of the people or saying that we should lock up our political opponents, that is not American. That sounds like a totalitarian dictator. We need to get back to that generosity of grace and decency that's at the core of our country. Those white families that helped my family move into the town I grew up in with great public schools, those folks in the workers' rights movement that were Catholic and Protestant, Irish, Italian, that worked together for economic opportunity for all. This is the spirit of who we are at our best, and we need to get back to that, because right now, folk are losing faith. They're thinking that the forces tearing us apart in the country are stronger than what holds us together. One of the main reasons I'm running to president for president is because I don't believe that, and my campaign will be about not just the great policy, not just winning an election. It's about the larger campaign for our country that I benefited from, this campaign that says we are a nation that's all in this together. We need each other. And if your family, like mine was, is denied housing, I may be a white American comfortably in my neighborhood, but injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and I'm going to fight for you, because when your kids do well, my kids benefit.
Senator Booker, thanks so much for your time. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
I'm psyched that you have your son here, and he's patient and quiet. But more than that, he is focused on President Obama. And I tell you this, I miss Obama, but I miss Michelle the most, Obama the most. All right?
And Bo Obama.
And Bo Obama, definitely.
Impressive conversation with presidential candidate Cory Booker here on the New Hampshire Now show. Presidential candidate interviews brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli. That segment of the show presented by the Birches at Concord, and the Hampshire Now program this hour proudly presented by Riverbend Community Mental Health.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now with Chris Ryan, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council.